the story doesn't end here, unfortunately. So,
right.
This is
it
kind of
sure doesn't.
For me, because what happened was my content reached a secondary audience. And what we had just discussed, it turned into Elevation announces press release. They will no longer use the word resurrection as a church.
There it is. There it is. That's what I got. I saw that.
That was challenging. And, you know, there were some people in our audience. They're in the comments. They're fighting for their lives. That's what they said. Check the source.
Oh,
and it was crazy,
man.
You know. But the irony is that the whole point is that there are some things that are probably not worth talking about when the medium is not the best place for it.
Welcome to the Eyes on Jesus podcast with Drew and Tim, two pastors discussing practical details about life, leadership, parenting, and being more centered around Jesus first. The goal of this show is to help you keep your eyes on Jesus through the busyness of life and clutter of your schedules. Now, join us for the conversation.
Well, welcome to the Eyes on Jesus podcast with Drew and Tim. We're excited today. Our guest is Brady Shearer. Brady is the creator and director of Pro Church Tools and helps churches navigate the biggest communication shift in 500 years. He's also a podcaster of the Pro Church Tools show. Brady, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Hey, Tim, Drew, great to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Absolutely. I was telling you before you came on, like your podcast has been life-saving for me, being over the social media of not only my own ministry, but also our church. And it's definitely my top two podcasts are yours and Carrie Newhoff's, which you've also been on. And so I get a lot of wisdom on there.
Canadians.
Yes, exactly. And it's interesting, you say navigating the 500 years, the biggest communication shift, and we don't often think of that because we take social media for granted, you know, but tell everyone just kind of how you got involved in this, just a quick synopsis of your life and anything else you'd like to add from your bio there.
Yeah, sure. So as you heard from my outburst, I'm Canadian. I live in Niagara-on-the-Lake, which is about an hour south of Toronto, real close to the American border. Of course, married for 12 years, two daughters, a 9-year-old and a 2-year-old. And I went to school to be a student pastor. So I have my degree in theology and youth ministry. Church was really like the first place where I ever felt kind of at home as a young human, accepted for all my eccentricities, found community with a really awesome group of friends and youth group. And I was like, man, I'd love to be a youth pastor one day myself and create this same environment that I was able to find home in. So I got my degree, but a couple years into Bible college, I was like, I don't know if I have the relational bandwidth to be a pastor, especially with these kids. It just, you know, they're going to need so much of my time, but I only want to work with churches. And so I took on this internship as the media director at a new church plant. And they kind of just put a camera in my hands and were like, go and make something for this church. You know, we're a church plant. We don't have much. And so if you suck, so be it. And if you don't, even better. So I'm a very driven person. And so I just went after that with everything I possibly had. And then, you know, I would get back to class and I'd look around at my peers and they're going to be youth pastors, worship pastors, lead pastors in tiny rural cities in Canada. And I was like, man, they're going to be in charge of Facebook as well. You know, it was all Facebook back then. Tim, I think this is a bit of your story. It's like, okay, you're going to do social, right? Sure, yeah. I guess I can handle that. And so I just started teaching everything that I was learning because I figured if I can pick up these skills, anyone can. So that's what led to the blog, prochurchtools.com. We've been podcasting now officially 10 years. Our first episode was end of March 2014. So we're approaching 1,000 episodes and about the same amount of time on YouTube. So that was kind of the inception of the company, the origin story. And then we just kind of kept growing from there. And today we've got a department in the States. We've got a branch here in Canada, about 25 employees. And we've been doing it all, you know, but the core since the beginning has been all that teaching.
Yeah, that's great. And it's changed so much even in 10 years, right? It's changing monthly, it seems like, just to stay on top of stuff. And it's so cool to have just communication outlets for, hey, I'm seeing this, are you seeing this? Or this church is having success here, let's learn from what they're doing. And at the end of the day, it's not like one specific formula, but I think as we shift with how social media is shifting, we can be on top of it. And I want to, you know, as this podcast is Eyes on Jesus, I want to get it out of the way first of the fact that, you know, a lot of people listening are like, I hate social media, or I'm in a church and I don't see the benefit of it. And just from your perspective, Brady, and you're going to have two different answers, I know, for this, but, you know, people that are listening, individuals, and then church leaders that are listening, you know, why is social media important today, specifically as we're trying to focus on Jesus and keep our eyes on him all week long and not just on Sunday?
The reason that I talk about helping churches navigate the biggest communication shift in 500 years is to anchor we're living through right now to the printing press, you know, 500 years ago. And we know what came from the printing press. The Reformation came out of that because for the first time, the average person was able to have the written word and read scripture. And there were plenty of critics of the printing press when it first came out. Surely books would have been printed. No one should read this book. No, you know, if we had never had this technology, this type of idea would never have gone forth in the world. And people feel the same way when we scroll our social media feeds. Like, man, this person should never have had access to a phone and the ability to create a video that everyone could have seen. Like, we should have just stifled this technology. And yet, what we also know about the printing press is that, like, our faith in its current existence would not exist save for the printing press. Right. And the Reformation was birthed out of like, hey, man, maybe our churches are interpreting scripture and using it in ways that are not exactly what this Bible says. And we're living through a very similar kind of removal of the gatekeeper's moment. Our ability to have this podcast at all is only because of this technological shift.
Right.
And anytime you go through a big technological shift, it's a lot like the Wild West. You know, we don't really have, forget rules and like, regulations from a government standpoint. We don't have like cultural understandings of like what's appropriate. And in terms of the creator side as a church and then the user side as a human, I would say that a lot of us long for the good old days of social where we call this the era of the social graph, where most of what you saw on your feed was just, you know, friend and family connections. And now we're in a new era that was really ushered in by TikTok. We call it the discovery era, where now the content that we see in our feeds is really influenced by our viewing habits, our personal interests, and our geographic location. And here's the truth. Likely, we're all nostalgic as users for the good old days, but there has never been a better time for creators to be doing social ministry. Just think about that final qualifier of your discovery feed. Geographic location. You as a church are a local institution, a local organization. The fact that people are more likely to see your content and not be followers of Jesus because they live closer to you than I am as a follower of Jesus because I don't live close to you. Like, that's an amazing thing. Yeah. When I got started at my church plant, we did billboards, we did radio and TV ads, we did mailers, and the cost of distribution for those traditional outlets was not insignificant. And we'd get together as senior leadership and talk about, hey, if this doesn't work, like a big chunk of our budget is gone. We're a new church plant. You know, most churches are about 100 in America. So surely many, if not most, listening can relate. Now, distribution on these platforms is free. You know, think about the feed that you see on your phones. Think about how it used to be. Everyone you saw, you knew.
Right.
And now, more than half of what you see is from people you don't know. That means, if that's true for you, there's real estate on everyone else's feed where your church can be. Your sermons, the good news, the gospel going forth into all the world. Yes, social media has its challenges. We are in this like in-between stage. It's a teenager, right? Social really came around 2005, 2008 for the public. Like, it's a just reach an adulthood, nasty teenager. What do we know about teenagers? They're awful and they're amazing. They're both. Right. And we're kind of in that phase right now with the internet. And we can bring the light to it as churches. And that's kind of what we teach.
I love that. Yeah, that's so true. Is don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's good to be found in it, you know, and the people are like, I'm not on TikTok because it's just ladies twerking. It's like, well, not on my feed. Like, you know, it might take you a day to like, you know, search for terms and things like that to make it personalized, but it really is what you make of it. And not that everyone needs to be on TikTok, but like, you know, you say like 10% of your churches are on TikTok and our church is on TikTok and we live stream on there, which I think is pretty rare. And the way I look at it is that, you know, it's so hard to get people to walk into a church, right? And there's ways to do it and stuff like that. But, you know, people are always on their phone. It's literally a portal to the world. And if I can impact, unlike Facebook and YouTube, where I'm live streaming to people that follow me, TikTok, I have a chance to reach someone who's flicking through the lives to experience church, even if it's for 5 seconds. If I can show a 16-year-old kid a church service, even if he comments something negative about the spaghetti monster in the side, I still feel something that I've shown him something that he's not going to experience on his own yet.
Yeah.
And so like there's something about the mission field in things like TikTok and social media that I think is exciting. Instead of saying like, oh, all the negatives. Well, what are we doing to disciple? And Drew and I did an episode on discipleship digitally recently, and it's an interesting term. And Drew's always getting me to think about terms, you know, discipleship. Well, what does it actually mean? Or right. I always think of the fact that, you know, he always says, well, us pastors are always excited. And I look at it and it's true. We're always excited about something. We're always excited about Sunday, excited about our sermon. And I try not to use that term anymore, just thanks to Drew. But, you know, when we look at social media from a discipleship standpoint, a lot of times what we see online is information or teachings and not discipleship per se in the term of like a mentorship session. And so what have you seen done well with digital discipleship specifically, and where do you see it going?
So in terms of social, it's really important to understand like what stage of a relationship you have with someone through social media, because there isn't a great amount of depth to social. It's great for width. It's not especially good for depth. So what you're able to do is reach a ton of people in like a really kind of shallow or introductory way. And that probably doesn't translate especially well to discipleship. I think the best version of discipleship is walking with people one-on-one in real life. I don't think there's any substitute for that. Sometimes I come on shows and folks misinterpret my work to assume, oh, he's suggesting we don't need in-person church. Digital is a replacement. It's like, no. Digital can do things that in-person cannot. And the inverse is also true. And in-person is the foundation of what we do. Online can basically allow us to reach so many more people to eventually have them come and work into that incarnational community that church is meant to be. In terms of discipleship, though, Gen Z, depending on what data source you look at, spends between 24 and 48 hours per month on TikTok. That data is from Hootsuite's 2022 trends from a platform called Sensor Tower and another one called data.ai, if you want to track down the actual citation. That's actually not just Gen Z. That's all TikTok users worldwide outside of mainland China. We know that TikTok skews younger. It's going to be mostly Gen Z and millennials, but you know, Gen X is going to be sprinkled in there as well, a little bit of the boomers. That's like 5 to 10% of a person's waking time in a month. Like that's a lot of time. And so what that means is, if we're spending time on these platforms that are serving us content that we're almost indirectly choosing to see based on our habits, if we're not being really intentional, we are being discipled by what we are consuming.
That's right.
So like right now, I'm trying to find a really good orzo recipe for my family because I'm a big sucker for orzo. So I'm being discipled in the ways of cooking orzo because once I searched for it once in TikTok, you know, everyone behind the scenes was like, all right, he wants orzo recipes. All right, we got 2 weeks. Show him a ton more about orzo. And I was getting all the best orzo recipes and they were, you know, being shown to me that way.
Yeah.
And so we have to make really intentional choices as users of TikTok to tell the algorithm what we want to see. The misnomer, the misunderstanding is that TikTok is going to force you. And I say TikTok, but let's be really clear here. Discovery algorithms are the same on YouTube and on Facebook and on Instagram.
Yeah.
TikTok was such a force that all of these other platforms a couple of years ago moved away from what they were doing and invested a ton of money and capital and manpower into developing algorithms that could rival TikTok's. So it's the same on those platforms as well. Social, at the end of the day, wants you to spend as much time on the platform as possible. So they are not going to continually serve you things that you do not want to see. If you keep seeing things you don't want to see, two questions have to be asked. One, are your viewing habits different from your stated values? Mm. Like back in the day, you know, Pastor Drew, you know, maybe you used to say this. I heard it a lot growing up. Like, show me your bank account and I'll show you your values. It's like where you spend your money is going to tell you about what you care about. Well, now, best thing you can do is just screen record your For You page and just swipe for about 20 seconds, 2 minutes, then watch that back. That's about as like sober of an accountability partner as you'll ever have. No, that is not going to lie to you. It's going to show you exactly what you care about. So if you're seeing things that you don't want to see, that's not TikTok Meta's intention. That's going to be based on the information you're giving them. So pause and hold. If you don't like something, pause and hold and say, don't show me this again. Curate your feed. And then you'll be like me. It's basketball and it's orzo and it's fashion trends. And I'm very happy with what I see on my feed.
Yeah. I love that. And I see you mentioned basketball. I see the Raptors champions hat behind you. So that's always good. So yeah. So I'm a LeBron fan. So I'm sure you could appreciate that a little bit too.
But. Hey, Lebronto, man. It was a good time.
It was a good time. So you mentioned how beneficial it is for churches to get involved on this. And I couldn't agree more. The church I'm a part of, like I'm sure a lot of people that are listening, that maybe their church as well, we're just now getting into the game. This is more of a startup mentality. We're finally at the point where we've got some time, we've got some post edits, we've got some cameras, and we're ready to start setting up and really developing our social media content. What advice would you have for churches that are at that stage, that are just getting into this game of social media and building content? Like, what advice would you share that might help provide a specific direction to take content or a specific way to send content out?
I always like to acknowledge first that, yes, churches have fewer resources relative to most businesses. You're not going to probably have as much money, as much time, or as many people, as much creative talent in-house or on staff. Churches also have an advantage that is unique amongst virtually every organization and institution, and that is a senior leader putting in a ton of creative and spiritual effort every single week to create a sermon, aka like content. So right. You as a church are sitting on a gold mine of content that would be unheard of. If you're a dentist office, if you're a realtor, if you're a lawyer, like you have to clean teeth and sign contracts and sell homes, and then you have to consider social media. Like churches, the hard work is already done. And coming out of the pandemic, because every one of us had to figure out either recording or live streaming in some sense, now we all have video recordings of this. When I was talking about social with churches pre-2020, it was always like, hey, what are we going to create from scratch? Because not everyone was live streaming or video recording. Coming out of the pandemic, everybody was. So now we're all sitting on this goldmine of content that we can repurpose for social. And so I think having the right attitude going into it is important. It's really easy for churches to say, like, you know, how are we supposed to do this? I wear multiple hats in ministry. You know, like I have an actual job description and I'm doing this on top of it. Like churches are the only organization in the world with the hard work, heavy lifting already done. Now we just need to kind of take best practices to translate that content and bring it to social media. And we can get into that if you want to. Most important thing is a mantra that we repeat over and over again, which is no weeks off. You, a church, you're not an influencer. Same goes for me and the work that I do. I don't make my money, nor does your church, selling impressions to brands. Influencers have to post every single day, multiple times a day, because they need to be able to go to brands and say, this is how many impressions I get per month. So here's how many views I can give you. And that's going to help them charge more. As churches, that has nothing to do with what we do. So no weeks off becomes the mantra. Most churches, though, we have seen, are unable to reach that indefinite sustainable approach. What typically happens is there's this burst of inspiration. Churches are publishing a ton. And then again, multiple hats, we get pulled on to another project. Our responsibilities take us elsewhere. And then there's a drop off. And then we never get to see what social media can actually be in for our church and how it can positively affect what we're doing in person. Hashtags, post timing, those things, they affect maybe 2-3% of like actual outcome of performance of content, but a consistent publishing calendar plays a huge, huge deal. So for me, I always publish Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. If there's a long weekend like this past week, I'll do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or I'll skip Friday. So I'm just publishing basically on average 3-4 times a week. Why do I publish on those days? Because churches work in the office Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and most people have either Monday off or Friday off. And so I'll publish on one of those days, but the 3 days where every person that works in church is there, I'm publishing content. For you as a church, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. If you can stick with that every other day, that is a sustainable approach that's awesome. You put those two things together, we have a huge advantage as a church. I recognize that. We're going to lean into that. And no weeks off, that is the foundation for a really good approach if you're just getting started.
It's really good.
Being intentional and having a strategy is important and not just throwing it up at the wind and hoping something sticks. I mean, just like there's no formula for the algorithm, there's also intentionality behind it, being like, what are people looking at? When are they looking at it? And how are they consuming it? And then being there for them. Because as a church, you want to be on their feed, not just the other church, but you want the gospel to be at the forefront, especially people in your church. You want it to reach them and give them content throughout the week. And, you know, I think like most people, I have a love-hate relationship with social media. You know, I was in 2018, I was going to quit it, just cold turkey, delete everything. And God called me back into it to make a difference on it. And at the same time, I'm still, there's weeks where like, I'm either personally spending too much time on there, or I don't like what I see on there because there's either infighting or you have to play the game in order to get, you know, the clickable title descriptions. Or, I mean, just an example is, you know, my biggest video on my personal TikTok is, I don't do this often, but I posted a clip of a famous preacher and be like, wow, I can't believe he said that. Right. And it got 2 million views, where I do a lot of discipleship videos of like, hey, let's dive into this Bible passage. And I get 200 views, you know, and it's like, it's the sensational stuff that people often go towards. And, you know, I noticed this recently with the pushback and I would say hit pieces on social media that was done about Elevation Church from one of your podcast episodes when you interviewed their copywriter. Now, I listened to this episode before this stuff came out, and I thought it was a great episode. I thought it was insightful and great strategies to hear from a mega church on what they do to, you know, with having intentionality behind their verbiage and how that can be applied to smaller churches. And I was shocked to see it come through my feed constantly of like, oh, Elevation doesn't like using the word resurrection in their media. And I didn't even think twice about the fact that they don't use that in their marketing, but she made a point in the episode to say, we say it in our service. So it's not like we're opposed to the term.
Yeah.
But,
and their songs. And, yeah. Yeah.
And ultimately that's their choice on how they market it. And it's not like they're avoiding the topic, because once you come in, they'll hit you with the gospel, you know, but that's not what came through on all the articles that were written about it. And so anyway, I was just curious, Brady, on your, you know, opinions on kind of how that went down, and maybe a bigger context of oftentimes how social media is used for infighting among Christians instead of the goal, which should be to spread the gospel.
Yeah. So great social content is found at the intersection of faith and culture for us as churches. We need a piece of content that's going to be accessible to those that know Jesus, but just as accessible to those that have no affiliation with faith at all.
Yeah.
And so for context, I bring on Nikki Shearer. She's the, you know, copywriter at Elevation. And we're talking about language choices that Elevation makes. This is true for larger churches, but it's true for small churches. We've all been in that place where an elder or, you know, a person is up giving an announcement and they've been going on for a while. And it's like, this has nothing to do with what we're trying to do on a Sunday morning. And this is just, this has gone off the deep end.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Elevation was talking about, hey, here are the standards that we have for language, how we talk about things internally so that there's this consistent voice. In the same way that churches have values for the mission, hey, here's what we're trying to accomplish. And we all know if we want to get our church like all pulling in the same direction, but hey, here is why we exist in this place for this time. And here's what we're trying to do. That is really important, because when you make a decision with budget, you make a decision with programming, you can link it back to the values and say, remember, we all agree this is the mission and these are the values. It's not about personal preference. This is what dictates what we're doing. Not me as the pastor's choice, what I want to do. It's about this and fulfilling this to the best of our ability. So Elevation takes that same approach to language. Here's how we're going to talk about things. And so I asked about Easter and I said, hey, so Easter's coming up. Like, how do you talk about Easter? And so then Nikki goes in and she says, well, we purposely on our Easter invites use language. So we'll start with scripture and we'll be like, okay, this is the verse that we're using for our Easter programming this year. And when we talk about this verse to Christians, we're going to use language that is shared with them. And when we talk about this verse with people that have no faith background whatsoever, we're going to use language that's going to be accessible to them.
Right.
And, you know, for useful context, 50% of Gen Z now identifies as atheist, agnostic, or nothing in particular. They are the least religious generation in American history, and they're the first to be 50% plus, like, non-religious at all.
Wow.
And so the landscape in America is changing dramatically. And so for us to assume that people understand, like, the blood of Jesus and Calvary and resurrection, which were the three terms that Nikki highlighted specifically and said, we're just not going to use that on an Easter invite because I might have like 100 characters and I'm not going to get into the resurrection because people know what that means literally, but they also don't might not know about the incarnation and original sin and the fall. And to understand the resurrection, like, why does that matter? Well, you need to understand all these other theological topics. So we're going to save that for Sunday morning. And I agree with you, Tim, like, we talked about this and the podcast went live and our audience saw it and nobody said a thing. And I then create content from the podcast. So I created this single post. And the post's title was Why Elevation Won't Use the Word Resurrection on Their Easter Invites. And I sent it out to
our newsletter list. So I sent it to 50,000 churches as an email newsletter. And I got, you know, several dozen emails back and everyone was like, yeah, that makes sense. Cool. And then a week later, I published it on Instagram. And on Instagram, my audience was kind of like 95% positive. Normally it would be 99% positive, but there was like 5% that were like, I don't know, like, I feel like it's okay to go straight to those things. And to be clear, you know, when you make a post like this, you're not trying to say, here's how every church should behave. It's more of an illustration of here's how this church is doing things. And if you don't care to do things this way, it wouldn't be your preference. It wouldn't align with your church's mission. You know, praise God, this is how they're doing things.
Right.
Nuance like that doesn't exist often. And so we had some churches in our audience that were like, you know, this is watering down the gospel. How could you? So a couple of those pastors, I went to their websites and they had Easter invites at the top of their website. Your church's website is your front door. People are going to check that out before ever coming in person. And they had kind of like what I would call wishy-washy language, was like, you know, find a place for community here. And I was like, well, pastor.
Right.
You know, you're not using that language there. You're not getting into the doctrine of the incarnation either. And, you know, one of those pastors eventually reached out over DM and was like, hey, ma'am, I think I was wrong. Like, can we remove these comments? We removed them. It was this great moment of like, you know, reaching across from disagreement and finding common ground.
Awesome.
So that was my audience. The story doesn't end here, unfortunately. So,
right.
This is kind of newer for me. Because what happened was my content reached a secondary audience. So our audience has grown a lot in the past few years. You know, we have 150,000 on YouTube and past 100,000 on TikTok and Instagram. And so we now have the type of reach where a piece of content like this can reach farther than it typically would. And so it kind of reached this secondary audience. And what we had just discussed, as we've heard here, turned into Elevation announces press release. They will no longer use the word resurrection as a church.
There it is. There it is. That's what I got. I saw that. Yep.
So
that's what hit my front door right there.
That was challenging. And you know, there were some people in our audience, they're in the comments, they're fighting for their lives.
That's what they said.
Check the source. Oh, and it was crazy, man. You know, like we were in Relevant, we were on Patrick Bet David's podcast. We're in all these publications. You know, Relevant said in theirs, Brady Shearer comes to their defense. I was like, with this post. And I was like, comes to their defense. The post was the original thing.
Yeah, there's no defense needed.
That's so that was strange. That was a new experience for me. You know, if there was anything to learn from it, I mean, Nikki was kind enough to reach out and she said in an email, she's like, hey, like you really defended our position well. We're not, like, this isn't new to us. Like, it's unfortunate, but like, it's not like you misrepresented what I was saying. So that meant, you know, something to me. But the irony is that the whole point of what I was trying to say is that there are some things that are probably not worth talking about when the medium is not the best place for it, right? Like on an Easter invite card, are we going to get into the doctrine of the resurrection? I mean, that's probably just not the right place. Save that for a 40-minute sermon. The irony is that maybe me taking that singular moment from the podcast and then bringing that to social, maybe that wasn't the correct medium for that conversation. Now, internally, I'm already pushing back because like 95% of our audience found it helpful. And then like it reached a secondary audience where in bad faith it was taken. But it's still worth reflecting and being like, you know, maybe some things are not worth bringing to social because they actually can't be understood with nuance because the platform just doesn't really allow for it.
That's interesting. And I was watching Elevation on Easter morning on their live stream and some of the comments were like, who else is here to see if they mention the resurrection?
And well, I feel so bad, man.
Someone's like, not only did they mention the resurrection, they mentioned the crucifixion, the blood of Jesus. Like they mentioned all these things in the sermon, you know? And so I think it comes down to, if you already have a bias against Elevation, you're going to see that as a self-fulfilling thing. Like, oh, see, there it is. That's why it is. That's why. Without, you know, and that's why the internet also can be so dangerous for truth as we're trying to spread truth. If you're encamped on this little perspective of your denomination or your comfort, it can be hard to, like you said, look at the nuance of things and take things at face value and just see like, oh, you know, eclipse prophecy, it's got to be true because this person said it. I mean, there's so many things that I think can put us down a rabbit hole of just nonsense, right?
So when I saw the thing from Elevation, so I used to work at Elevation for a little while. So when I saw the thing, the very first thing I did was text the majority of people that I know that are still working at Elevation and just said, y'all are about to have a great Easter. Because I'm just telling you, I know that church. And every time something like this happens, I'm like, yeah, you hate to deal with it, of course, right? And you certainly don't wish it on anyone. But I always have seen what comes after that and the blessing that comes on the other side of that. And I'm sitting here listening to, you know, there's articles and podcasts of people going off on them. And I'm like, you realize the last song they released, Trust in God, has literally the word Calvary and resurrection in it, has the blood of Jesus in it. Like all of these things that you're mad at, they're now like sending worldwide. So really, there was some hilarity to it. And I agree, you handled it very, very well. Elevation handled it very well, as they do. I'm with you, Tim. I was wondering if Pastor Stephen was going to come out on stage and the first thing he said was something to do with resurrection, just to throw a shot. Right. But you know, we talk about Elevation. They're a huge, huge church, huge organization that you were able to communicate with and were able to, in their context, relay information that works for our context. When it comes to Easter invites, when it comes to marketing, it makes everybody go, okay, that's how they're doing it. Now, in context for me, what does that mean? How does that translate? And I think that's really helpful. I'm curious, as Elevation is such a large organization in the church world, what are some organizations outside of the church that you've started paying attention to and you're grabbing ideas from and you're recognizing, hey, when it comes to social, when it comes to getting their message out, they're doing a really good job. And maybe that would help us recognize, hey, maybe we should be paying attention also.
Yeah, one of my favorite things to do is look at creativity in other industries and then bring that into the church space. I think it's really easy to look at the church down the road and then look at what they're doing. And then the church down the road looks at what you're doing. And then, and then what happens is there's this like self-fulfilling kind of creative loop where everything starts to look like a remix on the previous thing, which is a remix on the previous thing. And we kind of get stuck. And so very rarely do I look for creative inspiration in the church in terms of like spaces that I am in a lot with social, fitness, fashion, and fragrances are the three F's where I spend a lot of time. I'm just kind of now getting into more like food. So there's a fourth F, you know, recipes and that set type of thing. These are industries that are way bigger than church. And so it's really interesting to see what creators there do to basically break through the noise. And I think Tim hit on something that's so important. There's always this needle to thread, which is how can I make something accessible, but without kind of compromising my own conviction and making it like nasty. And so
that's good.
Talk about some practical examples of this. You know, one of the carousels that I published recently that I would say like flopped, despite it being like just so good. The content was so good. The big cover, the hook was, is TikTok safe for churches? And I did another version of the identical piece of content with a different hook. And the hook there was, dear church, beware this TikTok trend. Went like gangbusters. Identical content, two different hooks. And that's because one had a bit of like this like negative element, like, uh-oh, what do I need to watch out for? And it wasn't sensational. It wasn't a bait and switch. It wasn't a clickbait, in my opinion, at all. But there was that kind of like negative undertone, which tends to perform better. And I see this with the social sermon clips that we make for churches, where it's like, you know, if we can present a element of a sermon that goes something like, you know, beware this one marriage trap. It's like, that's going to do a lot better than like one tip for a better marriage, even though if it's the identical thing.
Yeah.
And so that's always like a choice where everyone is going to have a different level of conscience on. I'm typically fine with like, if we're not doing every hook is negative, like, you know, let's say 20 to 40% of them have kind of like a negative undertone. And as long as that's where we're meeting people and then we immediately bring them to something that's life-giving and positive, then, or in my case, not always talking about like, you know, faith element, if it's practical and useful, then I'm okay with that. What I don't like are kind of like, let's look at this negative thing and just like look at it for the purpose of like getting our blood pressure and heartbeat up, which does way better. So what you'll see with my stuff is it might start with like, I did a recent one, stop saying link in bio and do this instead. And the whole point of that carousel was to talk about this new trend on social where it's called DM automation, where if you comment a word on a post, I can automatically send you a DM responding. So if you comment promo, I can send you like a download link to a church graphic that you can use on social. And we did that on a recent carousel and, you know, it got like 2000 comments. That's like a really cool thing that's developing. Now, if I had made that title, new social media tactic, it would have got, you know, a tenth of the feedback. Where if I say, stop saying link in bio.
Like, well, no, what? Why do I have to stop saying this? We've always said this, right? Like,
right.
Number seven will shock you.
Yeah, it hooks you. So, and that's personal taste, right? It's like salt. It's like, to some person, that's way too salty. And another person that's like, man, I can't get any flavor of this at all. And right. So, you know, that's where the intersection of faith and culture, that becomes the philosophy that every church can learn from. Now, how gotcha. Elevation yeah. does that creatively, their creative expression, you might be like, that's a little too salty for my church. Whereas another church might be like, yeah, like I want to have this level of flavor, but the value is still the same.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's really good. That's I like good. That. Yeah.
That's very good.
I know you've been talking about carousels and I'm like, I'm not like, I can do sermon clips and I can repost stuff, but like when it comes down to like some of the fancy like flashes of all the different pictures at once. And I mean, there's templates for it. I've been starting to look at, you know, getting those templates and just uploading pictures, you know, being that I'm not like super creative as far as that goes, but like even a carousel, I was like, what content do I use for a carousel? But our pastor does like a email on Thursdays for a preview of the upcoming sermon. I was like, what if I just dissect that into a carousel, you know, with some key points, like what to expect on this coming sermon.
Smart.
And then, so I did that yesterday. I'm like, I don't even know how I did yet. I didn't look, but like, I think like you said before, there's content out there coming from your church one way or another, whether from the sermon or from emails that are going out or from small group leaders. And like that repurposing of it is so important. And I think with AI now too, we did an episode on AI. That's like a whole new field of how are we mm-hmm. going to use AI as a church? And I didn't even have this on our questions, but I think like, you know, no one really knows what the impact of AI will be in 5 years, let alone 1 year. But you see it like churches that are pushing back against ChatGPT. My pastor, it's always funny, like if he doesn't come up with something in time, it's like, oh, I'm just going to ChatGPT it if you don't send it to me in the next hour. And he's right. like, oh, no, I'll send it to you. You know, God forbid we use ChatGPT. It's just funny, our interplay with that. But I think so many people are using it and don't realize they're using it because it's become integrated with so much now. And, you know, I think like we said on when we talked about it, Drew, is like, it's just depends on how you use it, like anything. You know, how are you yep. going to use a Google search term, right? You can use it for bad things. You can use it for good things. Is that kind of where you fall, Brady, on like the use of ChatGPT going forward? And do you have any like predictions or where you see trends going for churches?
Yeah, in terms of where AI is going over the next few years, I am, you know, just watching with bated breath like everybody else. You know, what the prediction is like, hey, there's going to be this, you know, hockey stick curve, Canadian reference, where it's like, you know, there's growth, it's improving. And then suddenly like it goes nuclear. And the pace of improvement increases so much that suddenly it's able to do things that you never would have thought it could do before. I'm trying to find the content on my Instagram right now, but we did a post a while back on like rules for AI and how we would recommend that churches use them. Because the truth is, you are using AI probably, you know, before it was right. called AI, if you had a photo that you shot in your sanctuary that was really dark and you needed to like, oh, we need to denoise this a bit because it's really grainy and you denoised it, that's AI. That's Lightroom if you're using that platform, let's say, but they're all, mm-hmm. you know, using similar algorithms, using AI to identify what type of noise is in this image and then how can we intelligently remove it so that you have a cleaner right. looking image. But in terms of the rules, you know, we have these two parameters and the first parameter is why are we using AI? And the answer is AI can be a useful shortcut. And then parameter two is what are our boundaries for AI? And our answer for that is we're not going to use AI as our exclusive source. So right. let's talk about some examples of this. So first example is you need to write a description for the about page on the church website. So you take a sentence about your church. You know, we are Hope Church in Nashville, Tennessee, and we believe in connecting people to community and hope in Jesus Christ. You then put that into the AI generator and it uses your source material to expound on that to create a paragraph. You put in one sentence, it gives you 10 sentences. You look at those 10 sentences and you are the one that decides, is that an accurate picture of our church or not?
Right.
You know what? 90% is correct, but there's this one thing that we would never say that. Let's remove that. Good. So that would pass our policy. You didn't use it as like the source material. Your sentence was the source material and it was a shortcut, meaning you could have written it, but you just saved 20 minutes by having it write it for you. Here's a second example. Sermon research. You ask the AI what the book of James says about mercy and to provide citations. The AI follows your instructions. You don't double check the sources. Fails our policy. You know, you can just Google Stephen Schwartz, ChatGPT, to understand how dangerous something like this can be. Basically, there was this lawyer that used ChatGPT to look up sourcing for a case that he was trying to like make. He's like, well, you know, if we look at the precedent of, you know, Jones and Johnson in 2012, and people were like, wait, where is that from? And they looked it up and they're like, ChatGPT just invented a citation. Like there was no, that case never happened. There was no precedent whatsoever. Oh, and of course, it was really challenging. Sorry.
That's incredible.
Landscaping crews right outside here. I don't know if you can hear that.
That's all right. That's all right.
So that's actually really hopefully useful instructions on how to use ChatGPT and things like this, because it's super useful. We used it as another practical example. We had these staff shots and they were really pixelated and really old. And this church only had versions of them that were cropped into circles. And we were building a new website for them. And they're like, well, we're not wanting the circular headshots. We want them to be square. So I brought them into Photoshop and we used generative fill to fill the space around their faces. Their faces were their faces, but the background that was already blurred got expanded. We upped the resolution, enhanced the image. And like, okay, great. The source material was a photo of a real person. We didn't change that. We just then filled in this negative space that otherwise didn't exist. Now, it had some challenges because at the hand part of the staff person, it turned them into a deformed monster. Their hands looked like, you know, dinosaur hands. So we had to crop that, right? So it's not perfect yet. And that's what I'm getting at with the hockey stick curve. Like maybe one day you know, in a year, we'll go from like pretty good to like perfect.
Sure. I like using it for anytime we're titling something. Like anytime we're titling something, I'm all about throwing it in there. I mean, we did that when it came to this podcast, when it came to like episodes and things like that. Like we'll throw it in there. We'll get 10 ideas back. And if anything, it at least makes you think at a different level. It at least challenges your creativity, because if you are stuck on something, it at least brings you to a place of being unstuck. And I think that's really helpful. And, you know, one of the things we've actually been talking about as a church is when it comes to writing, like written posts, things that take time, like we talked about, especially when it comes to like Facebook and you're wanting to promote people joining you on Sunday mornings or any other content you're wanting to put out. We've talked about making sure we produce an element that's human when a human writes it, and then producing an element that's AI when AI writes it, because there are some times that we say, hey, I need a Facebook post for a church. It starts at 9 and 10:30, and this is what the church is about. And then boom, they give you a Facebook post. We'll copy that. We'll paste it into Facebook, but then we will actually say, like, here's your AI generated invite for Sunday. And we've even talked about like having a pretend like made up AI social media manager, and having moments where the AI social media manager posts and having moments where the human element posts, and then vice versa. So we're trying to get into the game of all of that. You know, we want to lean into that. But like you said, we also want to make sure that we're still being true to who we are. We're still evaluating what it says. But I mean, if it can take 20 minutes off of your day and it can do that week after week after week, that certainly has some value that I think people need to lean into and express a little bit.
Drew puts it in, send a post for inviting people to Sunday, and then it comes back with all this excited stuff. And you're like, don't use the word excited.
Don't use the word excited. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you can tell what kind of church it thinks you are pretty quickly by the by the invite. It's like, come to this glorious time of, I'm like, I got to give them more information. I'm really excited about my sermon series. I got to give them more information. So,
it know, almost talks like old English at first, like dear congregation.
A little bit.
Like,
you know, a little you bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun, it's got the dove emojis and all that stuff. You got to work with it. You got to teach it a little bit, but it'll do its thing. It'll do its thing eventually. That's good.
Hey, Brady, I wanted to get your thoughts. I've been starting what I call a social media volunteer support team. And I don't know if anyone else has done this, but I wonder if, just based on your ear to the churches, like if this is some, if I'm on the right, you know, track here. But my thinking is that based on the algorithm of, you know, it pushes it out to so many people, and if it doesn't do well, then it kind of dies in the water. It pushes it to the next group and how things work. But if you post something as a church and you immediately had 30 people that went to it, liked it, and commented on it, and that was part of like your volunteer support team, where they're in a Slack channel, I say, okay, here's a link, just posted this, go. And they go to all the sites and they do that, kind of like salting the tip jar, if you will. But also like the volunteer support team could do things like, you know, hey, use the Slack channel for ideas. If you'd like to see things, if you'd like to create stuff, if you have a skill in social media, if you'd like to be a part of, like, I'm ultimately going to be the gatekeeper of it, but if you'd like to throw ideas my way, if you'd like to do camera work, if you'd like to be more involved in the church on social media on Sunday, like, that's also like the next level of the team. But just with the initial thought of, okay, to push the algorithm, is there something to that of having a dedicated team to do that? What are your thoughts?
Yeah. So those like engagement cells definitely don't work anymore. Okay. They had a moment maybe like 7 years ago, but the algorithms are very smart and can detect that type of thing. And if it was as simple as being able to game the system, everyone would do it. If you think about SEO, what matters for search engine optimization on like traditional search engines is backlinks. So other links linking to your site to basically say, hey, what they're saying is trustworthy and it has a good reputation, so much so that I'm going to link to it. That's the foundation of how SEO works. So what came out of that were you could like buy backlinks from people and like, hey, we're going to set up these fake sites and all they do is backlink to these other sites. And that way we're going to beat Google. And it worked until like Google was like, well, obviously we can't let this work because now people aren't getting content that's good. They're getting content that has been farmed and manipulated. So the way that algorithms work in their simplest sense, and they all work this way, is when you publish something, it gets shown to like a couple dozen people. And based on how those couple dozen people respond, that then determines how the algorithm shares it with like more people and more people and more people. So if you send 25 people right away to go and hit like and hit comment, that is just going to be ignored because it's not going to be part of like the pure test group that the post is going out to.
Gotcha.
In terms of actually having people get involved, you know, absolutely. You know, I one day I was just a kid with a camera in my hand going to make a vision video and I had no competence whatsoever. But what my pastor instilled into me was confidence because he was like, I trust you to figure this out and go do it. And I think churches are often looking for competence first. And maybe you have some truly prodigious talent in your church, but that's rare. Yeah. Start with the confidence and the competence will follow.
That's good. Yeah, that's a good direction to take it because I do want to get people involved, but you know, you can't really cheat the system, I guess. Just put out great content and do all the stuff you say and help churches do. And you know, that'll take care of itself. And even though you can be frustrated, like, why did this one video perform well? It wasn't even like formatted right. It wasn't great lighting. Why did it get like all these views? And then what I thought would do well got 200 views. And this other thing, you know, did amazing. And so there's some of that with just like, at the end of the day, I think I figured it out. But at the, you know, I'm reminded time and again, I don't. And plus, like I said before, I'm in my 40s trying to do this on social media. And so I need the help of younger kids that are, you know, I don't do Snapchat. I don't do some of these other up and coming platforms. And so if I had other volunteers, you know, that could use their talents for that in the church format and feel like they're doing something for the church when maybe they can't sing or, you know, give a sermon, that kind of stuff. I think that's how we incorporate, you know, at least an aspect of how we incorporate Gen Z into this is that, hey, your church is struggling right now with, you know, their Facebook is all about just come to Sunday or just announcements. Like, maybe for people listening, if you see that at your church, you know, just ask to get involved. Like, I'm sure, especially smaller churches, your pastor that doesn't have time for it would say, yeah, absolutely, help me, you know? And so maybe that's a call to action for people listening is just use the gifts. And, you know, if you think you're on social media, just scrolling, wasting time, like maybe God's raising you up in this moment to be used to call back into it. And so I think that's a good reminder. So Brady, why don't you tell us as we wrap up, you know, some things that Pro Church Tools will help churches with? Because I know there's a lot. So maybe just break it down for those listening of what services, you know, they can reach out to you for.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to dive deeper into social media, we have a free 1 hour YouTube video called The Church Social Media Masterclass. Basically teaches everything that we do for churches one-on-one, shows you exactly what we do. We don't have any courses to sell or any info to sell. Everything that you see on our channels, at Brady Shearer on all social channels, prochurchtools.com, the Pro Church Tools show every Wednesday on YouTube, on your podcast player of choice. It's like, that's the best teaching we have. And then what we do is like, if you want us to do it for you, then we'll do exactly what we just said, but then you won't have to spend time on it. So at socialsermons.com, we work with about 200 churches one-on-one every single week. And then we have a software platform called Nucleus, powers about 3,000 church websites around the world. It's a premium church website builder, kind of the next generation of church websites is what we're trying to build over there. You can find that at nucleus.church.
Yeah. Awesome. I've had some churches reach out to me like, hey, what platform do you use for websites? And I was like, if you were starting just straight up, like I sent him to Nucleus because like you have the giving, you have the full platform, like you have it all there. It's really a great resource for churches that just are looking to build or looking to, you know, optimize. And you have social, was it not the photos, social photos too now?
Yeah, we added a platform or product called Portraits to Portraits. Social Sermons, where we're sending photographers to churches in person to capture photography and then turn that into social media posts. So we launched that in January. That's been really fun so far. We're getting set That's for awesome. Our second round of photo shoots. So sending all the photographers back to those churches, it's been really cool.
I actually might sign up for that. I like that idea a lot. It's hard, at least at our church, to find photographers that they might know how to take good pictures, but like to know how to take good church pictures and church life.
Yeah.
It is sometimes a hard thing for them to navigate. And so I'm like, man, this is a great idea of just having a photographer come out once every 3 months and give you a great resource. So anyway, you'll probably see me signing up for that. But
yeah, it's good.
As we wrap up, what else are you passionate about right now? You said your four F's. Anything you want to share with us in the world of fragrances or food or anything else?
Yeah, you know, it's spring, so all the winter fragrances got put away. Spring fragrances are coming out. A few of my favorites, Creed Green Irish Tweed is a great one.
Wow.
Can't go wrong. Big fan of that one. There is another 13 by Le Labo, if you're looking for an American fragrance, right? Very nice. And then in terms of fashion, you know, break out the relaxed jeans. The 90s are here. Thanks to Gen Z for that. We're stacking long sleeve tees with short sleeve tees on top of them again. The browns and blues of the 90s are back. It's big. Wow. It's exciting.
What's old is new again.
We're back in middle school. This is unbelievable.
You've been into women's fashion too, I've heard.
I have?
For your wife?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that's the other thing on my feed.
So that's the clip. That's the clip we're going to use right there to promo the episode. Yeah. His face when you said you've been in women's fashion, and yes. Then we're just not even going to title like the one thing you didn't know about Brady, and then we're just going to throw it out there and see what happens on the episode.
Oh my goodness.
Well, so Tim's referencing, I've been redoing my wife's wardrobe because I'm kind of like the fashionist in the house, and she loves fashion, but she'll just buy like a trendy item. Like she bought cowboy boots last year and then was like, how do I style these? And I was like, babe, yeah, you need a holistic approach to your wardrobe.
Yeah,
you
this is a, one yeah. It's quite the statement you're making, right? Yeah.
100%. So yesterday we went down to Yorkdale and we finished out like this 1 month like redo of her wardrobe. And she went out today to have coffee with her friend and she put on a new outfit and she's like, I've never felt this confident. Like, I feel great. And that it was just this fun creative project to work on together. It was lots of fun.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I don't know, man. I've been a one fragrance guy for a while. I think I'm missing out on having a wide selection maybe for different.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing wrong with a signature scent, you know? People know you buy it.
Okay.
Great.
They're consistent.
Trademark.
Mine is English leather. It's what I grew up with. No, I'm just kidding. That's such an old one. I grew up with my dad.
Dracar Noir.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, boy. Well, Brady, thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate that. And we'll have links in the bio to... No, link in the bio. You say don't use link in the bio.
Look, don't use link in the bio.
Yeah. Link in the show notes. Okay, that's okay to say, right? Link in the show notes for all your stuff. We appreciate that. For those listening, until next time, go with God, grow in discernment, and keep your eyes on Jesus.
Thanks for joining us on the Eyes on Jesus podcast with Drew and Tim. Don't forget to hit subscribe. If this episode blessed you, please share it with a friend. Check out the show notes for more ways to connect with the hosts of the show.